a great strength to undertake what the church tells us. And we need more divine strength to undergo the trials of life. Twenty-3 years of working for the Holy See. Oh, the chores. I call them odd jobs. Now the Vatican gives them. Because I talk about them. Oh, Lord. But after a while, you actually enjoy it. St. Francis Liguori has a delightful story in his classic work on the Holy Eucharist. He says, after her death, St. Teresa of Avila, who was already in heaven, said to a nun, those who are in heaven and those who are on earth should be one and the same in purity and in love. We are enjoying and you are suffering. And that which we do in heaven, you should be doing on earth with the Blessed Sacrament. The same identical God become man, who is in heaven, the source of beatitude, but also no more faith in heaven. In heaven, you won't have to believe anymore. We'll see. But we'll get to heaven only if on earth we have believed. Nobody else will make it. Remember, we were talking about Holy Eucharist as the object of our profession of faith. Then we've just talked about the object of our profession of hope and the consequences of professing our hope for Christ really present in our present. By the way, I'm calling these Eucharistic meditations for publication, because they are much too personal to be called just, say, a treatise or theology of the Holy Eucharist. The real presence in our profession of love. Why did Christ institute his real presence in the Eucharist? For our profession of faith, of hope, and of love. This meditation, shall I call it, the focus on our profession of love. I should have said this earlier today, but this is still Easter Tuesday, right? Okay. Why did Christ rise from the dead? Well, obviously, that having died, he might then give the crowning proof for our faith in his teaching and his commands. His teaching is humanly inconceivable, and his commands are humanly impossible. One reason. Why did Christ rise from the dead? So that, having become man, God would never cease to be man for all eternity. Second reason. Third reason. Why did Christ rise from the dead? so that he might give us the blessed sacrament. A perfect definition of the Eucharist is the risen Christ on earth. Easter Sunday continued. But let me tell you, it's one thing, how one I know, to hear these words. What a difference, what a momentous difference between hearing the words and realizing them. We're now concentrating on Christ's real presence and both the profession of our love and getting the graces that we need. We better get them somewhere. No single monosyllable is more common in the literature of the human race than love. The Sangma languages make it more than one syllable. Most languages, one syllable. English, one syllable. Namely, love. By now, there are as many meanings of love as there are human beings, and I mean that literally. Literally. Do these meanings contradict each other? They sure do. A couple marry. They pledge their love. They pledge their love. Only God knows. Maybe they don't even know what they really mean when they say they love one another and pledge their love until death. But at one extreme are those who say they love someone because that someone can provide them with what they want. I love you because you fulfill what I want. She gets older. She uses more cosmetics. Spends more money on hairdressers. But she's not the woman that he married. He no longer loves her. Poor fellow. Maybe he went to the dictionary. Now the dictionaries now are no help. What love means. For most people, when they say they love someone else, I mean this. This is our faith. We are naturally, profoundly, deeply selfish. Constantly, congenitally. Naturally, spontaneously. As one psychologist told me, a Catholic, believing Catholic, Father, there's one commandment God did not have to give us. Thou shalt love thyself. Well, what then does real love mean? Or what does love really mean? To love, as we've been saying, is to will good to someone. Vele bonum aliquui. Vele, the Latin is important. V-double-L-E. Bonum. B-O-N-U-M. Aliquui. A-L-I-C-U-I, Alikui. To will good to someone. It also means, logically, to please someone, either by sharing with that person what one possesses or by doing what someone whom I claim to love wants. Basically, there are two kinds of love. They're not mutually exclusive, but they are distinctive. And a large part of growing in our faith is to see the difference between the meaning of words. With self-interested love, one kind of love, self-interested love, I love another person, but for my own sake. For my sake, as something, rather to be someone, who is either useful or pleasant. I love you. You are good to me. You satisfy me. And that is the world's definition of love. And if there is one meaning, that we who have the faith, first of all, we've got to understand ourselves and live it. How the world needs. There is nothing, nothing that the world needs more than to understand the meaning of true love. There is then another love, much higher, the love which we call the love of friendship. With this love, I have a selfless love for another person, for that person's sake, for his or her good, to please that person. And then the term that the church has coined is, it is the love of benevolence. Benevolence. I tell people, look, learn some Latin to understand your English language. 90% of all English language is from the Latin. 90%. I see people chattering in English. They don't know what they're talking about. They really don't. Benevolence. Some big idea. Volo. I will. Bene. Well. I will. I want. What is good? What is well? Pleasing. To somebody else, not to me. To love another person with benevolence and please that person may cause me pain. And that is no pious cliche. They go on. This is still terminology. Over the years in teaching theology, I found out that you explain your terms, it's like walking in to say, well, a supermarket. And no labels on the bottles or the boxes. So what do? You open the bottle and taste it. Or even more seriously, in a pharmacy without labels. Now that would be something. Words are labels. Labels for what? Labels for thoughts. All kinds of ideas people have. If you have no labels, or the label does not square with the thought. So this is explaining the labels. And now discussing the difference between divine love and human love. Those are not mere labels. Human love is the love of human beings. Out of human motive and in a human way. On the other hand, divine love is the love for God. All the love of others, out of the love for God, and in a divine way. What a difference. First, let's look at the divine love for God himself. When we say divine love is the love of God, we include, surprisingly perhaps, but we include both levels of loving God. On one level, there is a self-interested, but watch it, not selfish love of God. Self-interested love of God is another name for the virtue of hope. When we hope to obtain from God what he promises to give us, to be loved him. If we didn't love him, we would not trust that he would keep his promises. So we do love God, even when we profess the virtue of hope, but we love him with the expectation that he will reward us for our love by blessing us with his gifts in this life and the gift of himself in the life to come. And this, 40 years to learn it. God is one being who will never, never disappoint our hopes. Never. Human beings will, and they do. We may love them, and we trust them. We trust them because we love them. Are we assured in human hope that those whom we trust will repay our love for them, which is self-interested? No. And that is why, and I mean this, unless we have divine hope, human hope will drive us out of our minds. And when I read St. Paul, and he tells the Lord, Lord, how happy I would be if you called me to yourself. It would be a great gain. But because you want me to stay on earth to, well, help others, I'll stay, Lord. Well, believe me, I can't wait. First time I've said this publicly, that passage from St. Paul is my divine office to keep me going. Expect human beings to disappoint you. And what a mild verb, disappoint. Expect it. In other words, unlike human beings, our hope in him will never be disappointed. That's one kind of love, the love of hope. You don't usually combine those two. But loving God by expecting him to reward us is another meaning of the virtue of hope. Hope is the love of God, confidently expecting him to reward my love for him and my expectation You'll not be disappointed. And then we go on. On a higher level, there is a totally selfless love of God. And this is more than just a higher degree of a self-interested love, which is another term for hope. It is really a higher kind of love. Means I love God. Not precisely. Notice, I never exclude the expectation of being rewarded by God. Hear me? Never. However, in my own mind, it means that I love God not precisely because I expect to be rewarded for my love, but because God is so good, so great, so lovable in himself, that I want to please him and do whatever he wants just because he wants it, and not because I will get anything from him in return. Even the saints did not live, what a safe statement, always on that level. Because both kinds of love are pleasing to God. The highest form of the love of God, therefore, is loving him without looking for or expecting any recompense. And one of the famous prayers of St. Francis Xavier is exactly this. I love you just because you are my God. Not because I desire heaven. Not because I fear hell. But only because you are my God and I love you. But even Xavier did not always, shall I say, feel that way. And God never wants us to exclude our hope of reward for loving him. Never, never. We should also remember that divine love includes love for others out of love for God. But we must stress that this love of others is always based on our love of God. If it is authentic, supernatural love. Our love for others is to flow from our love for God, and expressing our love for God, putting into practice our love of God, proving our love of God, and living our love of God. That's why God put other people into our lives. That's why he put unlovable people into our lives. Which by all human psychology wasn't a lovable person. What else? A person that, well, you cannot love. As far as the world is concerned, that's the only kind of love there is. What do you do with the unlovable people in your life? You put them out of your life. The unkind, the uncouth, the thoughtless, the cruel. One Good Friday, I'll never forget, got a letter, copy of what was sent to Rome, pages of the most awful denunciation of this person's character, sent to my Vatican superiors. Well, and I was making my annual retreat to come out on Easter Sunday. But, given the nature of the letter, I didn't know what to expect, but I figured the Lord wants me to open it on Good Friday. I did. It's real. Then our love for God takes on meaning. It's real. Loving others out of love for him. We don't go around telling people, now Mabel, except my love of God, I wouldn't even look at you. Don't spoil it. Finally, as with faith and hope, divine love is impossible without divine grace. And if there is anywhere that Christ's statement, "Who can finish this sentence? Without me you can do nothing." And it says nothing. If there's anywhere, well, that statement of Christ is true. Without me you just cannot love some people. And for some people, love most people. Some people are so wrapped up in themselves. Of course they love others, but you know how. Mazuma. It's a business. You love me by satisfying me, and I will love you by satisfying you. You cut down on satisfying me, I will cut down on satisfying you. Divine love, that's what divine grace means. It's supernatural. And it's terrible English language of ours. We don't even have an adjective to go with a noun. Grace. Graceful. Meaningless. To apply here. The word we use is supernatural. Supernatural is the adjective that goes along with a noun, grace. It is supernatural love. Love for others that we're to have. And it's impossible to practice naturally. It must be nourished and sustained by the grace of God. And I mean both nourished and sustained. In fact, divine love does not even begin to exist unless it first has been touched by grace. I can't even begin to love someone selflessly except for God's grace. How many people over the years that I've counseled, some cases try to counsel, some people just won't listen. I use one language, I think they understand the language, they speak English too. They're in another world, in a different world. I mean it. Both speaking English, don't know what I'm talking about. Christ's statement of the Last Supper, as we've just said, without me you can't do nothing, is especially true when it comes to divine love. Nowhere is this statement more real than when it comes to loving God as He wants to be loved. We cannot do without Him. It can only be done with the divine grace which comes from Christ as God and through Christ as man. Call this the alphabet of the faith we have to explain. What this alphabet is before we use it to penetrate more deeply into the mystery of the Holy Eucharist. This is the ABCs of our faith. And in teaching priests who then are going to teach others, how I hammer this in. When you teach the people, make sure they know what you're talking about. Don't just use words. Be sure they understand that without God's grace they just cannot, and the verb is they cannot, love God as He wants to be loved, and that means especially loving others as God wants you to love them. All the psychologists, all the psychiatrists in the world are not just useless, they're harmful. They are positively harmful. Like the wife of the psychiatrist, good Catholic couple, calls me up. Would you please tell that she gave me her husband's first name to stay home more than he's doing. He puts in 70, 1 week, 80 hours counseling people. Here I am alone, but with 6 children. Or Mary Kelly, that did our cooking in Kalamazoo, and I live with the human chaplain, rented an apartment, and she did our cooking. She came in once a day, cooked the evening meal, and prepared the food we could leave in the refrigerator for the rest of the day. Her daughter did babysitting, and she especially did babysitting for the children of a nationally famous child psychologist who wrote books on the care of children, traveled all over the country telling parents how to take care of their children. The daughter told her mother, I've never had worse children to take care of than this nationally famous child psychologist. Selfish, mean, disobedient. You have heard about Dr. Colson on the West Coast, C-O-U-L-S-O-N. You've heard about Dr. Rogers, a famous psychologist. Well, Colson and Rogers worked together. Rogers died, Colson is still living. Colson became a Catholic. He met in California, this is like 2 or so years ago. And we've met since. And he told me, he said, Father, for the rest of my life, I want to expiate all the sins I've committed in the years of counseling people. One of the best-selling books, I'm sure he sold over 1 million copies. I'm okay, you're okay. My clock says 7 to 3. How long? Can I still go, or is it all right? Superior's not here, right? Are there any questions? Is there a question? You have a question? Okay. I'd rather not start a new section if I didn't have to. If you remind me, I'm on lecture 16, page 3. 16, 3. Thank you. So, Native American petition to Rome. I found this at a foyer table at St. Cyril in Sterling Heights. People drop things like this off. There were 2.5 pages of signatures. I wrote warnings all over the page. In union with the consistent teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, persons outstanding for the heroic lives of Christian witness to the gospel within the church have been enrolled in the canonical roles of those called saints. Such saints have been found from the ranks of all peoples of faith and all ethnic origins. Among Native American peoples, Blessed Kateri Tekakwitha is revered as a person whose faith and life are a shining example for the whole church. Yet to this time, she has not been added to the list of canonical saints. We, the undersigned, petition Your Holiness Pope John Paul II to conclude the process of investigation into the life of Blessed Kateri Tekakwitha and declare her to be a saint. Such a declaration is especially pertinent at this time of the 500th anniversary of the arrival of the culture of Europe. So, his arrival brought with it the seed of destruction of the culture of the Native American peoples, as well as the seeds of the gospel for all peoples of the New World. Well, what's bad about this, of course, is brought the seed of destruction. That's not true. However, I would say, as it stands, it should not be signed. However, what Blessed Kateri needs is not further investigation. She needs more miracles. So, get people to invoke her for incurable diseases and get her canonized. Oh, we don't know what we are talking about. How can we best develop a good Catholic vocabulary? Be specific, please, as to the methods that work. So first, get a copy of the Catholic Dictionary. That's why that was written. And pray, by the way, the Doubleday will relent, because they've taken the big dictionary out of print, because they said it will hurt the sales of the smaller one. I've got lawyers in the case, but so far they have not relented. But then I would say this: learn the vocabulary that we use in English, but understand, I really mean understand, the Catholic meaning of these words. And sometimes you might compare what the Catholic meaning is with the dictionary meaning, say in Webster's or Random House dictionaries. Is it wrong to pray hard for an answer to prayer, for a favor we are begging God for, in hopes that if the favor is granted, it will truly strengthen our children's faith? We tell God, of course, not our will, but thine be done. Oh, whenever you pray for whatever will strengthen your children's faith, you are praying for what you need and what they need. Trust. And I tell parents in today's world how many parents are suffering because of the either loss of faith or departure from the true faith, or not living the faith. Keep praying, keep offering sacrifices. I tell them, your prayers will be heard. Persevere. Practice great charity toward your children, but charity that is also instructive. In other words, don't hide from them how you feel, how you think regarding, say, their having departed either from the true faith or not living their faith. Do as kindly as only parents can. In attending two complete masses on the same day, can I receive communion at both? Of course. Of course. That is why, honest, that's why, for the first time in the Church's history, never before has the Church allowed two communions on the same day, except for viatic, when a person is dying, could receive communion a second time on the same day. But no, and this is the main reason, because we're living in such a Christless, which means loveless world. And the principal grace that we receive from Holy Communion, and of course from Mass, we receive the grace of living lives of self-surrender and communion to love those either who don't love us or may even hate us. No words we can use, no words can express the mystery of iniquity that has penetrated some cultures of the modern world. And these are two words the Church keeps using: the mystery of the Trinity and the mystery of iniquity. What is going on in our country is the mystery of iniquity. Don't try to solve it. You cannot understand it. But believe that people have a free will. Without free will, they can even tell God. As Lucifer told God, I will not serve. And it is 3 o'clock. And next Wednesday, what is today? Today is the 13th. So I will be home on the 20th. So today 13th? So 20th. I will be, so we'll have class next Tuesday, is it? Thank you. Shall we pray?